Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there, and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson, joined as always by Kevin Zerman. It's Monday afternoon, Kevin. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I just sold my first thingy on Top Shot, and so I made like $2 profit. Super pumped about that.
How pumped are you to wait for 6 weeks for it to for them to actually send you your money, or however long it is now? Did they figure that out yet? Are people getting their money quicker now?
Yeah, it's in my account, so it like took a minute to like realize, because there's different platforms where you're like, oh, my money's sitting in like a Venmo account, basically, if you don't use Top Shot. But I figured it out. It's fine, I think.
Nice. Yeah, everyone's super concerned about not only your Top Shot, but everyone else's Top Shot. I see everyone posting about this, and then even the people who like love it, I don't feel like there's a conversation around it. It's just like, oh, I have this cool Top Shot. And everyone's like, cool, man.
I'm trying to think. I like him just trying to like make someone buy a Willie Cauley Stein, like his first Top Shot, for like $100. Like, that's where I'm at right now. So
I've heard it's very stupid, but just also fun and addicting. And it's kind of, when you think about it, that is the most, when you talk about comparing it to trading cards, that's probably the most realistic or tangible part of it, you know, where it's like everyone can agree, like, oh, it's just this cool trading card, man. And then that's it. Oh, cool. It looks neat. And that's it.
I'm in it for the money, Kellen. That's the thing.
Are you going to leave me in 6 months once you've made $3.2 million off Top Shot? Is that what you're saying? You're going to go on to bigger and better things?
I would, though, if I could, but I doubt it.
Speaking of going on to bigger and better things, we have dedicated this episode. We're going a couple weeks early, but just with the timing of our day and how the flow of this month is going to work out, we are going to go to the awards section of the end of the season and kind of do it right now. And the reason why I pitched this idea to you, Kevin, is because when you go through the awards and we're talking about MVP, all NBA, all defense, most improved, all rookie, if that was a thing with this team, coach of the year, executive of the year, and so on. The Suns have so many nominees and so many guys who have deserving cases to be at least included in the discussion for some of these spots, that I wanted to do an episode where we kind of whittled it down to our pitches, essentially, for who those guys are, who we believe should be in the mix enough. Because if you're not familiar with how this time of year goes, it takes a certain amount of buzz about a guy. I'll say right now, I'm concerned about Mikal Bridges making all defense, just because I haven't seen his name like anywhere in terms of that discussion. While there's a lot of Matisse Thybulle buzz about all defense when he plays 20 minutes a game, but I digress. We'll talk about that in a bit. But we wanted to spend an entire episode on this discussion, because we have talked about CP3 for MVP a little bit, but we'll get into that in this episode. And then, of course, there's a lot of buzz, rightfully so, about a couple of other awards. Without spoiling what we're going to get to, we'll go there. So with that, our usual discussion about the games, how the week's unfolding, the state of the team, we are going to save that for Thursday. The Suns are coming off of 4 straight wins. Of course, that really successful 5-2 trip. The Knicks win, in my opinion, was the best one of the trip, just because second game of a back-to-back, they showed a lot of resiliency. They beat the Clippers without Kawhi. They beat Utah without its starting backcourt. And then we should not just talk about the Oklahoma City game, Kevin. Let's just move on from there. All that sound good to you, bud?
Yeah, I'm fine. I don't really want to talk about Lu Dort and Poku. Poku, great
Poku
guy.
Poku Hive. Get on the bandwagon now if you have not. You're already late if you're getting on the bandwagon now, but we'll still let you on before you can't anymore, because that day will soon come for you. So yeah, we'll be later this week. We'll kind of hop back into that. But with this episode, we're going to do exactly what I said, which is going to be Kevin and I. We do not know each other's list, but I told Kevin, basically, pick three cases that you want to make, essentially, for the awards. So if you're feeling very strongly about, let's say, campaign for Sixth Man of the Year, that means that you might not be able to talk about Chris Paul for the MVP or Chris Paul for all NBA, Devin Booker for all NBA, and so on. We're going to try and hit on all of the cases and not just the ones that we picked, but we're obviously going to be spotlighting the ones that we picked, and we'll see if there's any layover between our lists, which I'm sure there will be, and so on. You ready to roll?
Yeah, let's roll.
All right, I'll go first. I'm going to make the case for Chris Paul to make first team all NBA. This is my first pick. Now, the Chris Paul MVP discussion has been really fascinating to me to watch because there is some truth to, oh, we need to talk about this player now being MVP, and now next week it's going to be this player because they played in this game. And something that I talked about with our own Dan Bickley in the office last week when we were in there for the NFL draft was that Chris having that game that he had against the Clippers on national TV in his last game on national TV of the season, that kind of stuff matters. If you guys remember last year when Book was the time of year where all stars were fully in swing, it was a week or two before they were going to be announced. And there was a game with the Pelicans against the Jazz, and Donovan Mitchell and Brandon Ingram got in a duel of sorts in that game. Both players were outstanding. And then it was like just a discussion of how awesome those two guys are and how those two guys need to be all-stars. And Book was left out of that entirely. That's how these awards work sometimes, and it's how MVP works a lot of the ways. But there's been a lot of discussion about how Chris should – some people believe he should be the MVP. Some people believe he should be top three. And there's also a batch of Suns fans who – want to give Chris the credit he deserves, but at the same time do not want to ignore the foundation that was in place for the Suns already. And it's pretty interesting because that just depends on how high or low you were on the team coming into this year without Chris Paul. Because I think I saw it was Cody and Zona talking about it today, how they were kind of saying like, yeah, fifth on a ballot for sure. But I think that's about as high as he should go because there was a lot going right for this team without him. I lean more towards Chris having a deserving MVP case than like he should maybe get like a fifth place vote or a fourth place vote. And I'm with that. Instead of pitching him to make MVP or win the MVP, be top two, be top three, however I wanted to phrase it, I'm going to make the pitch for him to make first team all NBA. I went through the names, Kevin, and his case is greatly aided by the fact of certain guys missing a certain amount of games. Kyrie has played under 50 games. He's struggling in that matter. And then James Harden went from one of those guys who it was that time of the week or that time of the month where we were talking about James Harden making MVP. He's played under 40 games this year. Even if he comes back in a week or two, whatever it is, he's not going to have enough games to deserve to be in the discussion. Kyrie's numbers, Harden's numbers, they're all super impressive. But essentially, it comes down to three guys that are there with Chris, and it's Steph, Dame, and Luka. To me, all three of those teams are not elite. And I feel like there's a certain balance to these awards where you can kind of be picky and choosy and say, I want to reward winning here, but I also want to give Steph first team all NBA when the Warriors are barely over 500 or just going to get in the play-in. But at the same time, Steph's leading the league in scoring with 31 points a game. His splits are 49, 43, 92. He's averaging 5.5 rebounds, 5.8 assists as well. All the on-court, off-court stuff, how terrible they are without him. It holds up there, and I think that he is certainly the first guy that should be on all NBA. But after that, Kevin, we've been talking about it and I've been writing about it on Westwatch for a month. I've really just not been impressed enough by Portland and Dallas and their ability to kind of separate themselves from that range. And it comes down to those two guys. Dame had a bad month. He missed some time as well, but his numbers were not that good. And right now he's shooting 43.6% from the field, which is the lowest that number has been for him since 2015-16. His scoring is a bit down. Now, last year, he had a huge year. He had the best season of his career, and now he's at 28 points per game. And he had to carry that team a lot, and he did so with a lot of insane clutch numbers. And with that in mind, Luka's numbers are also pretty ridiculous as well. He's averaging 29 points, 8 rebounds, 9 assists a game. He's shooting a career-high 49% from the field. And obviously, he deserves to be in consideration, but I truly do believe that Chris's impact and just his production as well warrants the spot over those two guys. So I guess I'll ask you right now, do you have Chris like all NBA on your list? Where do you have Chris in like the discussion in general?
That was just outside my list. And I think it's only outside because I was going back and forth whether Book or Chris would make a second team. Because I think one of them is definitely going to be on a second team. I think I would put money on that. But you bring up good points. I mean, if you just look at where the MVP discussion was, and I know all NBA is voted a little differently, and I'd have to go back to look historically at how much winning matters there, because like you said, Steph arguably playing his best basketball of his career, all that stuff. But if you look at like how MVP deciding is laid out, like Chris Paul was seventh in a straw poll that was taken mid-April on ESPN, where they actually asked, okay, right now, would you vote for these people? How would you vote for MVP? And like the three top guys for MVP, obviously they're not guards anyway. Dame and James Harden are the only ones ahead of him. And I don't even like James Harden being there then. I don't even remember if that was before his most recent like injury not playing. I mean, he tanked the Rockets, so I just wouldn't even like consider him very seriously for anything there. I know he's played ridiculous and out of his mind when he has been playing well for the Nets. But I think you make a solid case that Chris has the numbers, the production. He's just been healthy as can be. His team obviously is atop the West now, and that's the huge swing in the past week where I don't know if we mentioned that they're the top team in the NBA, like by record. So, yeah, I think you're on track there. I just don't know the historical value of winning when you talk all NBA team if it's different than MVP, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think that it's important that you phrase it that way as a lock to make second team, because I believe that the three guys that I brought up, Steph, Luka, Dame, there's clearly those three guys are going to finish on the top two teams, and Steph's going to be on the first team. And it's just a matter of how those last three spots are decided. And then I think that fourth spot is going to be, it's going to be a Suns guard, but I can't say who for sure. And that's, I think, why you included Book as well, because again, these awards are kind of random. Is there suddenly like a pitch for Chris to make MVP, but for some reason it's Book being talked about more for all NBA? These awards can often get kind of dicey in that regard. But I think if you're looking at this as like the full construct of the player, and when it comes to winning and everything, obviously there's no contest in terms of defensive impact between those four players. Chris is far and away the best defender of the four. I think that he's going to spoil a potential answer coming up shortly for one of us potentially. He has a real case to make all defense this year. Suns are a top five defense. He has some good stats that lend to him without me saying much more. And then when you just look at the seven elite teams right now in the league, Kevin, there are seven teams that have 40 wins. And you look at the Sixers, Ben Simmons in the mix with those four guys? No. Brooklyn has Kyrie and Harden. Like I said, they've both missed too much time. Milwaukee, you've got Drew, who's a great player, who is going to make all defense this year, I think, after he just bafflingly like hasn't made it a couple of times last year. And I think enough people like J.J. Redick and Kevin Durant and others have like talked enough about how great he is and made everyone kind of feel silly for leaving him off. But then in the West, I don't think Donovan Mitchell or Mike Conley has a better case. Denver, Jamal Murray's obviously injured now, and even before then, I think Chris had a better case. And then you've got the Clippers, which is PG and Kawhi. So I think that if you look at it from a couple different facets, just based on overall production, I think that's obviously where Chris's case hurts. He's not a guy that averages 25 points a game, but I also think that he's a guy where I don't need to sit here for another 2 minutes and explain why his numbers shouldn't be viewed that much differently. Because I think the thing with Chris, and the thing that's always been such a magnificent thing about Chris in general, is that his efficiency is really unmatched. And you look at right now, he's shooting 49.4% from the field, which is would be the second best season of his career. He's at 38.4% from three, which would be a top five year for him as well. And he's shooting 93.3% from the line, which would be a career high as well in efficiency. So he's doing all of this, everything that Chris Paul does, while being one of the most efficient players, having one of the most efficient seasons that he's ever had. And so I think that with that comes him deserving his due. And I believe that it should come in the form of first team All NBA as opposed to like this MVP discussion or whatever. It's, I think I brought this up a couple episodes ago, but I think that everyone just kind of wants to give Chris Paul this like lifetime achievement award and kind of award him for the fact that he's come to these franchises and helped turn them around. And everyone's kind of had this moment of realization with how he's done this now with OKC. He's done it with Phoenix. He did it with Houston and helped them reach another level. He obviously helped the Clippers in those ways. And then when he got to New Orleans, it was there as well. But with that in mind, it just doesn't work that way. And I don't think that's how we should view it in that way. It should just be for him this season and the impact that he's had this season, the player that he's been this season. I think that his overall impact game to game as well has held up for all NBA. And that's my pitch, Kevin. So if I had to make one pitch for an award this year for the Suns, it would be him making first team.
Should I go now with my top one?
Yeah. So let's do that as well. Let's make sure to preface that we're going from strongest to weakest. And I think that weakest is probably the wrong word to use because there are a lot of strong cases to be made here. But go ahead with your next one.
I think Monty for Coach of the Year is the most likely. Just you look at other teams. Okay, they're number one. And coaches don't have, you know, the numbers, right? So it's not Jokic is a ridiculous man, like Embiid, Giannis, Chris Paul going up against those guys for MVP. This is just all you have is a record. And I think Monty has, even last year, had the respect of when you just listen to a broadcast, like Jeff Van Gundy will say, this dude just knows how to coach people. He had that reputation before he coached a single game. I know Chris Paul coming in and already having Book matters, but I think when you talk about the bubble run last year, people are going to associate that with, look, this team already had the culture, and Chris Paul obviously just took it to another level. But I think people will credit Monty with changing just a franchise that was so down in the dumps, like. And you see it in their play every day and how they play, the reputation around the league now, why Jay Crowder joined them, why Chris Paul wanted to join them. I think that all points back to Monty. And look, there are other good candidates like Quinn Snyder, I think, goes into that kind of Eric Spoelstra bucket where people just don't realize or think about him as a great coach, and he is. But I think it matters that that's generally the same team. They've been a good team the last few years. Nothing really changed. When you talk about narrative juice, I think Monty has it over him. Tibbs might get some run just because it's New York and they're having a great season. I think Steve Nash, obviously, like just knowing that those star players have been hurt and have been in and out, and he's running Nick Claxton out there. He's running like Chris Chioza and Bruce Brown, like that's a really good job by him too. So I think they're going to get consideration, but at the end of the day, if the Suns come out number one or even number two, I think Monty's got a really good shot.
How dare you not include former Suns point guard Mike James in those and rattling out those names? How dare you? This is my number two, so it would have been next up for me. I don't think there's a case for anyone else that really gets close to Monty. I think that if you look at the way, and again, this, I wanted to bring that up for multiple reasons, like the MVP discussion with Chris and like how much better he's actually made the team and so on, because I am more of the opinion that last year, this team was in a bit worse shape than we remember. I think that we look at the bubble and how close they got to the play-in overshadows the state that this team was in last year, really just, I guess, like prior to the shutdown. Now, DeAndre's suspension, of course, didn't really help matters, and it put them in this difficult position. But I think the other thing to realize is that they won two out of three right before the bubble. So at one point, they were 24 and 38. and then they rattled off 10 of their last 11 to make that push for the play-in, which speaks to what was going right and the direction they were moving in, of course. But again, I don't want to like be the negative guy here, but the bubble, obviously, like the 8-0, and some of those games they played Philly without anyone. Luka didn't play after the first half of the Dallas game. That Clippers game was definitely hard-earned. There were a couple in there that were hard-earned for sure. But, man, I think that they were in a little bit of a worse spot last year than they were this year, and I think that Monty deserves a lot of credit for him to take a team that was, without a doubt, below average. We can agree on that, I think, below average last year, and taking them into one of the best teams in the league right now, and then statistically wins, losses, Kevin, those things that matter. They're number one right now. They're tied with Utah. And if you just look at Utah and the slow build for them kind of getting to this point, they've been one of the NBA's better teams for a couple of seasons now. And I think that like the rapid improvement that they have had, Snyder just doesn't have the case for that. And if you look at Snyder's case, I think it's just maybe built around more how the team has changed a bit, because they were just known as like this slower team that was really got down with defense. And now, of course, they're known for that and they can turn to that, sure. But like the 3-point shooting and how they've kind of like turned into an offensive force of sorts when they can be, because right now they've got the fourth best offense in the league and they're third in defense as well. They're an elite team for sure. But if you look at all the juggling that had to be done with this team and just Snyder having mostly the same group while changing stylistically some things for sure, but having the same group, where you look at Monty having to yet again figure out another guy to play with Book, which is Rubio and Paul are nowhere near the same player in terms of how they're used. Maybe stylistically pass first point guard, sure, but they're used way differently. Obviously getting DeAndre to the point that he's been at this year and the level that he's found at times, I think Monty deserves a ton of credit for that. You look at the way he's been able to juggle and find ways with the roster and finding guys who continue to improve, Cam Johnson being one of them. I think he deserves credit for that too. The way he's been able to use Book and utilize Book in a way where his numbers aren't really dropping that much, despite the fact that he's barely on the ball now compared to where he was at 2 to 3 years ago. I just think there's such an easy case for him over really anyone else that it's a no-brainer. And if I had to pick one of these that was going to come to fruition, I think it would be this one.
Yes, sir.
I mean, God, do we want to – I don't want to badmouth Steve Nash here, Kevin, but he has 3 of the 10 best basketball players on the planet, you know?
Also that.
They're hurt a lot, sure, but – hey, you know what helps when two of them are hurt? Having the other one, Kyrie Irving, who averages 27 points a game and shoots 50% from the field. He's pretty cool. And Nash is like, and that's like a different discussion, of course, where Nash has done like such a great job with the high expectations while being a first year head coach. He deserves to be in the discussion for sure. But to act like he's in the discussion. He's in the discussion the same way Chris Paul's in the MVP discussion, where I don't think most people are talking about him in terms of him actually winning it, but he just should just be in the talks. And that's where I have him for sure. But I don't have Doc Rivers there. I mean, really anyone else, Tibbs, Snyder, Malone. No, not happening.
Yep.
You want to go next or me? I only have one left now.
Yeah, I'll go next. Is that cool?
It's absolutely cool, friend. Go ahead.
Very original and kind of along the same lines. I have James Jones as executive of the year. And
okay, look, can I ask you one question?
Yeah.
Do you understand how executive of the year works in terms of are we grading them strictly for the moves they have made this year? Because I see discussions of this happening in a couple of different ways, and it's like, well, the case that Marks has over Jones is that his moves this actual year, not only is it the superstar moves, which of course are easy, but he also got Bruce Brown this year. You look at the other players that they've been able to add there. Claxton was drafted this year, right? He's a rookie, if I'm correct.
Second year.
But anyway, Bruce Brown has just been like, he's in his second year, Claxton. So my bad on that. But, yeah. But Bruce Brown is like, that was like one of the best moves of like the offseason pretty
but,
much.
But with do him, you think Bruce here. Brown is... Do you think Bruce Brown, you give credit to him or do you give credit to Steve Nash? Like, to me, that's a big question too. And
that's why this award kind of sucks, right? It's very difficult to It's okay. I wanted to present that before you spoke, just because I wanted to be like, should we include everything in the past? Because James deserves a boatload of credit for Dario, Cam Johnson, Cam Payne, and so on. But technically, they were a couple of years ago. You know what I mean?
So I'm carrying most of this on. Okay, they got a superstar to join their superstars. They already have.
I'm cool with either, by the way, just to be clear. But go ahead.
Right. But if you look at the, I'm just curious, and I brought this up here because I want to have the discussion of, do you give him credit for James Harden basically being like, there's like one team I want to join? Like, does Sean Marks get so much credit for doing the super obvious thing in that situation? Or do you credit James Jones more for being like, wait, like we knew Chris Paul didn't want to probably continue with the Thunder last year, but then when it becomes, okay, how's he going to force a trade? Like, wait, the Suns, really? Like, he wants to come here? Really? Like, I just see that more as a James Jones had to work a little harder, whether that was last year or this year, but the end result was getting Chris Paul. And to me, just the how that happened compared to James Harden just forcing it. I know Chris Paul forced his way too. And
that's where it gets tough. Like, I don't know how to judge this. Yeah.
But I don't know. Like, yeah, Sean Marks again. Yeah. I guess it is past. It's Sean Marks did bring Kyrie and Kevin Durant, and that's why James Harden wanted to go there. James Jones already had Book and had Monty. So I guess it's kind of the same thing. It just, yeah, I don't know.
I don't think it's possible.
I confused myself.
Yeah, see, I don't think it's possible to create a cohesive argument for this award without there being a simple counter to everything you've said. And I didn't mean to be that guy as you were talking and trying to talk yourself into I wasn't trying to talk you into your own circles or whatever, but Kevin Durant and all the, James Harden, he picked Brooklyn. At the end of the day, Chris Paul picked Phoenix. Now, yeah. I think it's much more obvious that James just wanted to go there right away, as opposed to, I think that the Suns did a bit of work on their own end to include themselves in the Chris Paul sweepstakes, quote unquote, whatever. I think that it's less obvious there than it was with Harden. So I'll give the edge there to the Suns for sure. I think that what James deserves credit for, and why I think that he's executive of the year too, which it just feels strange to say, because I think what me and you talked about before we clicked record is, should this team have the executive of the year, the coach of the year, two players make all NBA, two players make all defense, one player finish top five in the MVP voting, and a player receive some votes for sixth man of the year, most improved? Probably not. And they probably shouldn't have coach of the year and executive of the year, which is where we go back to the semantics of awards season. And it's like, okay, we have to pick one. They can only have coach of the year. They can only have executive of the year. That's kind of like how it works for some people a lot of the time, which I see the argument with again, but at the same time, the awards are the award, you know, it doesn't have to say that the Suns are the best team in the NBA in a decade just because they had executive of the year and coach of the year. It just speaks more to the story of their season and how incredible the turnaround has been, which is where I'll get to the point of the James Harden trade when it happened, Kevin. Hey, Sean Marks, put your foot down for Jared Allen, because you guys would have I would feel so much more confident in them. I still think that they are the slight favorites to win the title right now, but I think that they would be with Jared Allen as opposed to DeAndre Jordan. And look, they want to play with their buddy DeAndre. There's nothing he can do. That's fine. I would have also liked you to put your foot down for the significantly better player and then just throwing him to the Cavs. That's my slight throw there at Marks. And then again, with the Suns, you can make the same thing where whatever you heard about Tyrese Halliburton and like his agent wouldn't release this stuff and like he was forcing his way to the Kings, James Jones could have put his foot down just taking Tyrese Halliburton. I know, I said, no, like you're gonna be okay learning under Chris Paul. I think we're gonna take you. It's the same thing. So again, like there's always an argument there, and it's so annoying with like this award in particular. But to get back to the Chris Paul trade, Kevin, the James Harden trade was unanimous. Like everyone, like no brainer, duh, you do it. Obviously, there's risk, of course, but you do it. The Chris Paul trade received a lot of criticism, Kevin.
Yeah.
A lot of people looked at that and said, what are the Suns exactly trying to do here? And to put my talking head hat on, for James Jones to have the long-term focus and to see the whole field, to see the entire picture and realize and truly believe, I truly believe when they made that trade that he believed I could not only get this team into the playoffs with Chris Paul, but I could get us to the point where we're a top four seed in the West or maybe even one of the best teams in the NBA in general. That's the sort of ceiling that we can have with Chris. And I think that expected outcomes, ceiling, floor, that kind of thing, this is certainly one of the higher ones for this season. But he had the vision to see that. He had the vision to see that, hey, if we get Chris Paul, someone like Jay Crowder might come here, or someone like this guy might come here. I'll be able to get my guys easier because not only are they going to see what's working here and the type of group that we have, but it's going to be easier to create that culture now because we're bringing those guys in more because we have Chris Paul now. So now I can get Langston Galloway, Etuan Moore, Jay Crowder, and so on. And that is my case for him as well. It is not one of my three, I'll say that, because I think that Monty deserves more credit, in my opinion. But James deserves a lot of credit, and just for the vision that he saw. The vision that Sean Marks saw was having three of the 10 best players in the NBA. That was his vision. Great vision.
Guy. Yeah.
Would recommend that vision for anyone who can accomplish it across any sport. Like, great stuff. I didn't know I was going to roast Sean Marks on this episode, but I guess I'm kind of doing it. Former Suns great Sean Marks. I think that he's done a great job. I think that Bruce Brown, like I said, legitimately one of the best pickups of the season. He's been awesome. And I think that that's one of those things where there's clearly a guy in a bad situation that you can get. And even if you would have given up more, but again, he gave up, I'm blanking on his name right now. My goodness me. Zanon Musa was his name, was a former first round pick.
Yeah,
he didn't even make their roster, Kevin. They cut him. Bruce Brown has been like just a revelation. He's been incredible. So deserves credit for that. Obviously, the like Claxton and the other pieces that they've been able to formulate around this team. I think you look at what he did with like the Shamit trade. Oh my goodness, like great stuff there in terms of like how Kennard has worked out elsewhere and stuff, and just finding a way to capitalize there. But I think that Jones deserves. Would be my number one pick for sure.
Yeah, to me, I think this whole exercise, I guess I'm more squeamish about projecting that, like, these are media voting, and so people see Chris Paul, and they're like, well, he's pretty good. And I guess he gets some of the culture shift credit, too, but I think people will be like, well, Jokic and Giannis and Dame and Steph are still so much fun to watch. And then I think the culture change stuff gets pushed down to Monty and James Jones. So I'm not saying Chris doesn't deserve it any more than James Jones and Monty, whatever, but I just think that's how it's perceived. I could be wrong, though.
I think that what lineup, I don't know. I feel like Jones winning executive, I feel like Sean Marks is going to win executive of the year. We saw this with Pelinka, yeah. Right? Where it was just like, congratulations on getting Anthony Davis. Great job, buddy. Just killed it. Don't forget about those Rondo and Howard acquisitions, though, Kevin. Who could forget?
What did I do? Like Schroeder and, yeah. I was like, man, like the Hornets maybe should get consideration for being like not completely terrible. Like my mind kept going there because it's like, oh, drafting LaMelo, that was a good idea. That guy's like whipping 90 feet underhand passes. Like, I don't know. There's a lot of different ways you can go with these things.
We should be talking about how the Warriors passed on him way more than we have been. Way more. That's another version of like, LaMelo, I thought, was clearly the best prospect in the draft. And then same like to like Luka, it's that extent where like every team that didn't pick him, it's like, what are you doing? And Anthony Edwards is going to be really good. And we'll see on James Wiseman, but holy smokes. Okay. Me or you for the last one here. We've each got one left.
Go for it.
Okay. This one's tough for me because I think that both guys that I'm going to bring up here have a real case. And we'll talk about Devin in a bit. I'm not going to make the pitch for Devin to make all NBA just because I think that he has a case and I think that he might ultimately make it. Now it depends on if Harden or Kyrie makes it, because if you look at that list, there's two more spots remaining. We talked about some of the guards there. Do people want to vote Ben Simmons for third team all NBA? Do they want to include Donovan Mitchell or Mike Conley? I would say yes. And I think that it'll be Donovan and then the sixth spot. And I ultimately think that's where Devin could land. I think that he could make it there, but that's not going to be my case. I'm going to make an all defense pitch. And it's very tough to pick between Chris Paul and Mikal Bridges, because I think that one of them should make it and they should have a real case. But I just look at the overall exertion over the course of a season, the Ironman that Mikal has been throughout the course of his career, and the assignments that he takes night in and night out. Now, I think that where Mikal's case is going to get hurt is his overall effectiveness, which is a weird thing to say about something like this, where I'm saying, yeah, well, he hasn't been as good, but I think that Mikal has not been one of the 3, 4, 5 best defenders in the league. But I think that's because that he is guarding the best guy almost every single night. And yeah. I think that what he is doing as a defensive player to, for lack of a better phrase, Kevin, patch up what is one of their biggest weaknesses, which is the fact that Chris Paul is still a very, very good defender, and on ball, he can bring it for sure at times, but he is not a guy at his age who anymore can guard the other guy on some nights. I don't think that Chris Paul,
nor do you want him to.
And you don't want him to, exactly. So, it like, say 30 games of the year, he's guarding the other point guard who's bringing the ball up every night. I don't think they want that, unless that guy's going to be not really pursuing things on the ball consistently and is playing more off the ball. Book has been a much improved defender. I wrote about in my column last week about how he has improved the most defensively this year. And when we look at his year-to-year improvements that always come this year, it's been as a defender and he's been good. You also do not want him guarding Paul George or De'Aaron Fox or Ja Morant or Luka Doncic. You need someone else to do that. And the fact that they've had Mikal Bridges be able to do that, and he's been able to do a very good job in those matchups a lot. The fact that I can look at these 1-8-2-7 potential matchups and say, the only reason I would pause with Portland or Dallas is because of Damian Lillard and Luka Doncic, until you remember the fact that Mikal is one of the best players in the league at defending Dame and at defending Luka, especially with DeAndre back there against Luka. I think him and DA have tremendous chemistry with that Dallas matchup in particular. And there are nights where he is underwhelmed. I think the Utah game, the second one where Donovan Mitchell got the better of him all night, that's going to happen for guys like him. But I think that what he has been able to do for the benefit of the team shape as a whole, because now Jay Crowder has not had to take those matchups either. So you've got Chris and Jay quarterbacking this defense on the back lines and making those 2 to 3 rotations a game or a possession rather that you need. It sets them up to be in better positions to make this defense better. Because I think if you put Chris or Jay on the ball more and you have Mikal actually in that help role, that's probably worse for you in terms of just what you need out of that spot. Like Mikal calling out stuff, he's going to do that. He knows where to be for sure. But Chris and Jay have just been in it for so much longer and been at such a high level for so long on that end that they can do that job better. And I think that Mikal just sets his team up in like an MVP sort of way for all defense, that I believe that he deserves so much credit for them being the 5th best defense in the league. A lot of the stats do not favor him, and that's where I worry, where guys who take this stuff super seriously. I remember Zach Lowe was doing his most improved player podcast, and he had like a list of 60 guys and slowly got it down. The place where I worry is people are going to look at a couple of stats for Mikal and then just move on, because the numbers do not really look that good for him. In fact, when you look up some of the hustle stats, for example, the number one player in the NBA for loose balls recovered is actually Chris Paul. The player with more deflections on this team this year is actually Chris Paul, as opposed to Mikal Bridges. But again, I think that Chris is able to do that because he's off of the ball, where his next world instincts, where his ability to swipe at the ball, he's able to do that easier and gamble easier and just make plays on the ball better because Mikal is taking that primary assignment. And I just think that he's also just one of the best defensive players in the league in general. I know I just said I don't think he's 2, 3, 4, or 5, but I think when you look at the list, that's where it goes. Now, to close this out before I head to you, I pulled up all defense teams and just like the names that are being floated around. And I don't know. I have no idea how this is going to unfold, because there are 3 guys. There's Ben Simmons, there's Draymond Green, and there's Rudy Gobert, who are almost certainly going to make first team All-NBA. Now, the problem is there are so many guys that are deserving at all defense, but they're all centers. You've got Miles Turner, you've got Clint Capella, you've got Joel Embiid, you've got Bam Adebayo. They're all these centers. So now you go, okay, Drew, TJ McConnell, Thibault, yeah. Lou Dort, Mike Conley. Like, where do you go in there? And then I think the interesting thing is going to be, looking at the top defenses across the league for some of the best teams in the league. Sometimes it hasn't been that way and teams will stretch a bit, but I just think that automatically you look at TJ, first of all, again, I think that it really, really should strengthen Mikal's case that he's doing this, starting, playing 33 minutes a night, doing it, guarding the best guy, as opposed to Matisse Thybulle, who comes in and does it for stretches of the game, playing 20 minutes a game, as opposed to TJ McConnell, who comes off the bench for a team that's 30 and 33. I think that he really deserves credit there. I mean, Lu Dort, I think that he is one of the best defensive players in the league. He's proved himself in that for sure. The Thunder are also 21 and 30, 44. Mikal couldn't get credit for this last year because the Suns were too bad. I think that should be upheld for a lot of these players as well. By the way, Kevin, before I go and hand it off to you, researching this award was a treat because I found Rashawn Holmes saying that he should deserve an all defense spot when he's on the worst defensive team statistically that has ever existed. God bless you, Rashawn. God bless you.
Love it. You just said everything I was going to say, to be honest.
I'm sorry.
No, but okay. So
is this one of your picks?
Yes. This is like my last one.
Oh, and wow. We had a lot of overlay.
Yeah. I mean, so the one thing in this one, which is why it's even on here, despite, look, you look at his steals, blocks, it's not good. You look at opponent field goal percentage, it's not good because he's just on Steph or Dame all the time. Like, that's going to happen. But I just want to touch on your point about how these teams generally fill out, because what happens is it's going to be Gobert, Embiid probably will end up on there. Miles Turner has missed a lot of games, but low-key has been really good as far as a shot blocker, at least. And you look up how many field goals per game certain guys, centers especially, like, impact, and they're just around the ball going up a lot. And, you know, Rudy Gobert is at the top of that. So there's a lot of those guys, which is why it's all centers. Bam Adebayo, Marcus Smart will probably eat up one spot, but then there's like one or two usually that are just random, and that's whether it's Drew, Bledsoe last year, I think, Pat Beverly has made some. I don't know if Draymond should be probably, even though he's just not having the same impact just because people see them losing. I don't know if he'll end up on there. So there's
shout out to Nerlens in New York, by the way. That's a top five defense, and he's awesome. I love
that's
Nerlens.
A good point. That's another one. So, but
there's nine centers, Kevin. There's just so many centers. We haven't even talked about DeAndre, who's been awesome at times this year. I didn't include him just for consistency, but yeah, it's crazy.
Ben Simmons, like, I haven't watched them enough to know if he's probably still up there. So I just think the perimeter spots are few and far between, but it's hard to be one of those guys. And if you watch enough NBA, like, Zach Lowe probably is like, wow, Mikal's guarding another guy who's going to score 50 points. That's respect. And he's probably going to score 40 instead of 50. But I don't know. I don't know how that is judged, I guess.
I don't know. This is another one of these awards. If you guys can't tell and you've never indulged before in like award season and all this kind of stuff, this is usually how it goes. It's just kind of a lot of like, I don't know how they're going to do it. And then it just kind of unfolds, right?
Are you on the list where you vote? I don't know who ends up on those or how you end up on those, or if you're in a basketball.
Right? I do not have a vote this year, okay. Kevin. I do not.
I don't know, man. I don't know how these things work, but I would not want to be one of those people, because then I'd spend even more time than we just did prepping for this, and then I would still not have a great answer for you.
All right, man. We kind of covered it there. I briefly hit on a couple. You can shout out any that we left out as well. I think Book has a legitimate case to make All-NBA for sure, but this is just really difficult. I think he would have probably been fourth on my list, and then I probably would have put James Jones fifth. I think that campaign deserves some love in the Sixth Man of the Year conversation. At least bring up his name and talk about him for 30 seconds and his story and how he was out of the NBA, essentially does well enough in the bubble to come back. I was about to say he deserves some talk in Most Improved too. And I was going to say the really obnoxious, but also true thing that, like, if this was the New York Knicks right now, or they were just somewhere that had a bigger sense of attention. I think that they get a lot of attention right now with Chris Paul and Book and a lot of these guys. But I think that even with the amount of games they've had on national TV, I don't think that guys like Cam and Dario, before he was abducted by aliens and they stole his basketball powers, have gotten like enough love. And I think that Cam in particular, to go back to the James Jones point, Kevin, we were like, you sure? You don't want to get another guard? It's okay.
Yeah.
No. Okay. And then James like, yeah, he's our guy. And it's like, oh, he was your guy. And turns out he's just great.
He's just very good.
Yeah. Speaking of guys that are going to get paid, Kevin, unrestricted.
Ooh.
I believe that to be true. I'm going to say that out loud now. So
go
I don't scare
get that or, cash. Like I go get that cash song NBA.
I'm going to. Yeah. He is an unrestricted free agent this year. So I don't know if he's going to get paid, but he deserves some money. Him and TJ McConnell going to be reaping up those backup reserve guard paychecks. But I believe that he deserves some love in there for sure. I mentioned DeAndre for all defense. He deserves to be in the conversation, at least brought up amongst these like centers and like the next batch of them. That's the problem is that there are like seven that are awesome on defense. I briefly mentioned Capella. He's having like an unbelievable year in Atlanta, actually. Just randomly. And anyone else, Kevin, that I didn't bring up?
No, we did kind of miss on Book, but I just think the Chris Paul narrative is a lot stronger, which I don't think Book cares. I think Book likes Chris Paul and will give him all the credit in the world. But yeah.
Cam Johnson not having like the most improved trajectory, but in terms of a player improving, I just wanted to bring him up because he's dribbling a lot more, getting to the rack a lot more. Again, it's more of like the straight line drive stuff, and like the changing direction stuff is a bit of an issue for him still, and something I continue to see. But with that in mind, he's definitely been improving, showing the passing a bit more. And then obviously, like defensively, I think he's legitimately a good defensive player in the league. And there are just some possessions where he just denies ball penetration where I'm like, whoa, like, are you going to be a legitimately like great defender in a couple of years? Cause that's like the trajectory. That's what it's on the way towards right now. Cause he's good, man. Kevin, anything you want to promote on the site before we go, before I want to promote something I want to say on the site that's coming later this week?
I don't know, man. No.
Okay. Well, it's ArizonaSports.com. Kevin is the lead editor of it, and I edit the thing, too, and report on the thing, too. I'll have a story on Thursday, which is Chris Paul's 36th birthday. I've been asking players after shoot-arounds and when I can after practices about Chris and like some of his signature moves that we've all come to know and love in the past decade, playing with him for the first year. Just like this really big piece I've been working on for about a month now, which would have only taken me 2 days probably in pre-pandemic times, where I could have just gone up to guys for 2 minutes after shoot around like 2 days in a row and been done with it and talked to the entire roster probably. But those are the times, Kevin. Please do not keep us in Zoom forever. If you're listening, people who make those decisions across all these sports, please let us back in locker rooms and such. It would be very much appreciated.
When it's safe.
Yes. When it's safe, yes. Please add that part. Indeed, correct. Oh, man. How about them D-backs, huh?
We had a great last week. There are teams that are relevant still. Lots of them.
Shout out to relevancy, and shout out to the Suns for being the most relevant, Kevin. We just wanted them to be relevant again this year, and now they are beyond relevant. It's not even proper to call them relevant because they have ascended beyond it, gone above and beyond. I've gone above and beyond installing before I say goodbye to all you people. So I'm going to say goodbye to all you people. You want to say bye too, Kevin? Usually you don't say bye.
I'll say goodbye, everyone. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening, everyone. I should say that more. Good nod, Kevin. Maybe you should handle the outro from now on, but I'm going to do this one right now.
I'm going.
Bye.